Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, the daily podcast brought to you by the team behind Squawk Box.
NYC, this is CNBC Control 2.
CNBC's essential morning show.
PCR 2.
Every day, get the best stories, debate, and analysis from the biggest names in business and politics.
All right, we're coming to it next.
Today on Squawk Pod, Wall Street and Warren and the War of Words with pollster Frank Luntz.
Right now, capitalism is only 15 points above socialism in terms of what the American people would prefer.
Baseball legend Alex Rodriguez was a millionaire at 18. Now he's a CEO.
I work so much harder at my business than I did at baseball.
And weighing market risk with Bank of America's Savita Subramanian.
If you look at the number of unprofitable IPOs right now, it's higher than it was during the tech bubble.
Those stories and more, from Xerox shopping for a new future.
I don't know, do people still Xerox things?
To SoftBank's cloudy vision.
I think it's overrated to start with, right? I mean, making money.
I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. It's Wednesday, November 6th, 2019. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is hosting the New York Times Deal Book Conference today with a huge lineup, including the CEOs of IBM, J&J, Boeing, Uber, Airbnb, Netflix, and many more. Our guest host is Savita Subramanian. She is the head of U.S. equity and quant strategy at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. And it's great to have you here today.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Lots of stuff to dig through.
Lots
of
on.
Questions with the markets. We keep pushing higher.
I know. It's all-time highs, and we're closing in on the year. I think we've got, 39 trading days to go.
Is that it?
38, yeah, something like that. It's a very, very tight time frame here. I think what's interesting about the market is that it's shrugged off a lot of the concerns around trade, around a new administration potentially, coming next November. I think one of the reasons the market's climbed higher is just really light positioning. I mean, we started out the year with everyone bracing themselves for a recession, and that mentality didn't really change. So I think that's just fueled this continued rally in the market.
Xerox is reportedly considering making a cash and stock offer to buy HP. The Wall Street Journal says that Xerox's board discussed the potential deal yesterday. The company has an informal funding commitment from a major bank. Xerox has a market cap of $8 billion. That's less than a third of HP's $27 billion market cap. Both of these companies' former technology stalwarts that you certainly wouldn't characterize either company as that anymore. Xerox has already had a couple of falls from grace. It was the old Haloid Corp, remember? And I don't know, do people still Xerox things?
I copy things.
You copy things.
Like, but it's faxing. It's gone the way of faxing.
And they've tried to keep up.
I do Xerox things more than I fax. I will say.
HP's tried to keep up. I don't know. It's too, it's like, help me, I'm drowning. No, you help me. And then, I don't know. Are they both able to hold each other up? I'm not sure
HP shares were up.
Yeah. Xerox somehow is the acquiring company, and there would be a premium to HP's market cap of $27 billion. I mean, I just get depressed reading this. Xerox has already scrapped its $6.1 billion deal to merge with Fujifilm, another growth area. I should have never invested in all those photo mats.
You know what I mean?
I thought those were going to be, I thought we'd always go there and
turn in the film canister.
Right. Half the ones I turn in, they wouldn't give me back. I don't know.
What kind of pictures were you
taking? Yeah, exactly. I'm kidding. They're like, oh my God. Walgreens Boots Alliance, is this me too? Yeah, Walgreens Boots Alliance is exploring a plan to go private in what could be the largest leverage buyout in history. This would be big. The Dow component has a market value of about $55 billion. Sources are telling CNBC one of the firms looking at a deal is KKR, and that Evercore Partners is exploring whether a transaction could actually be put together.
Why do they want to go private? I can think of a lot of reasons. Maybe companies don't want to be public. What's the advantage
for Walgreens right now with healthcare in the background?
In the elections and with everything else that's going on.
Right, that's true. I mean, healthcare stocks have taken a beating and, they're probably uninvestable until we get closer to the election.
You think?
A lot of pharmacy benefit things. There's a lot of changes on the horizon depending on what happens.
But they heard Elizabeth
next
Warren's
November.
Plan and they said, okay, let's go private.
I mean, the backdrop right now is confusing, daunting, and changing all at once, I would think. So
every day you hear a new plan, but it's in the crosshairs. It's got bipartisan criticism.
I mean, cynically, you could say, look, to respond to this, we're going to have to do some stuff we don't want people to really know about in public filings.
You probably don't want investors who are nervous and who get hit, smacked left and right by the headlines
on a
continual basis.
Isn't,
so you can't do long-term planning. If you're out of the public markets, that's an advantage.
Who's the easiest person to blame for all of our health care costs all the time now? The middleman. We all talk about the middleman, the middleman. Let's get rid of the middleman. Let's get rid of a lot of these companies
because
they're middlemen. And I don't they?
Yeah.
And that's the immediately
that's
anyone
so
you ask someone
the
on the street, what's the problem with how do we fix? And they'll probably be able to come up with the term middleman.
You think it's the new HMO? Remember when HMOs were the...
And they, I don't think they were necessarily ever the bad guy. We still depend on HMOs to not do fee-for-service, but
that was like during Hillary Clinton.
That was the Hillary scare. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
When she was going after healthcare for the thing.
And then it was Medicare Advantage, which is also probably not a bad thing either, but they all get...
Blamed,
depending on which side of the aisle.
Costs are rising faster than inflation.
Costs are rising.
That's a huge issue.
It's
and
a
how
huge
we ever
part
get our
of
hands
the consumer wallet. I mean, what is it like? How much percent of your, what percentage of our wallet do we spend on?
I think it's 18% of GDP or something at this point. It's headed
huge.
Towards 25.
And I think that it's mandatory. But I mean, one thing that we noticed is in 2016, you really didn't want to touch healthcare until after the election.
But then it was goodbye.
And then it was a great buy because a lot of this is just headline risk. Medicare for all, it's going to be hard to fund, you know, low probability of actually happening. But the headline risk is enough to keep generalists out of the sector.
And again, I can understand why a management team for a healthcare stock would be like, look, if we can afford to not be in the public markets, how are we going to do any long-term planning? Let's tell you about another big story this morning. After the close in Tokyo overnight, SoftBank reported its first quarterly loss in 14 years. We won't see the reaction in the stock until the Nikkei opens tonight. SoftBank's Vision Fund suffered a loss of about $8.9 billion from the falling valuations of top tech bets, including WeWork and Uber. The Vision Fund has invested $70.7 billion in 88 companies, and as of the end of September, those investments are worth $77.6 billion. It says that the value of its WeWork investment decreased by $3.4 billion just in the second quarter. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon addressed the WeWork valuation issue yesterday in an interview with Wilfred Frost. Here's what he said about that high valuation and the lessons learned.
First of all, I don't agree it had a $47 billion valuation, because I would never say that because someone paid the last price, that's worth that price.
But it's fallen significantly.
But that's not price discovery. Price discovery is when a lot of smart people around the world, knowing all the facts, can kind of buy and sell all the time. So I just think it'd be very cautious. They're all different. You know, some of these companies have unbelievable technology. Some are venture. They may work and not work. You know, some are, you know, trying to grow so fast that they cause cash problems themselves, but they have a good underlying model. So they're all different. But I think there are lessons to be learned about these valuations and how you go public and how you treat the public shareholder, et cetera. And so those lessons should be learned by everybody who wants to go public.
Again, that's J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon with the comments on this. J.P. Morgan has gotten a lot of flack because they were the ones who were going to be the lead on the IPO for this. And I guess the good news is this isn't something that actually made its way to the retail public.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was just saying.
Yeah.
That these guys are eating it instead of the public.
Right. That would have been a much bigger problem.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because if you look at the number of unprofitable IPOs right now, it's higher than it was during the tech bubble. I mean, we're seeing more and more companies come to market that aren't making money. This is not a new story. So I think that tells you a little bit of something about the private markets.
Masasan was the one who was pushing growth at all costs, making sure that you got there, you won the market for the long term.
Exactly.
And they would be willing to tolerate losses to that point. People look at the mystique of Amazon and say, hey, Amazon didn't make profits, and
for
they
years.
Warned their shareholders. But yeah. Amazon never lost billions of dollars a year.
Exactly.
Depending on what happens next year, we may ban profits anyway. So it's that. I mean, they're over. I think it's overrated to start with, right? I mean, making money.
People think you're serious when you do that.
She is serious.
You're not.
No, Elizabeth Warren is serious about banning. I mean, that might be an overstatement,
you're a little facetious, but
a little
facetious.
I think if you ask the average millennial, what do you think of the profit incentive that corporations have, they would say it's greed and it's a bad thing for society. They have no idea about Adam Smith. They have no idea about Milton Friedman. They have no idea about how the economy works. They have no idea where prosperity comes from, where tax dollars come from. They think that if you get rid of expenses in health care,
that was the boomer generation when they were going through.
That was boomers. That was,
you know, the millennials are, there are a lot of them. That's the difference.
So I'm making a monolith, but you see the polls.
Yeah, I
see those.
And there is a concern by a lot of people.
70% think that some type of socialism or democratic socialism is a good idea.
New.
70%.
That's new. But I would say the
Look,
younger generation.
If you don't,
these things
if
not.
You don't have the viewpoint that the private sector treats capital better than the public sector, it makes sense that insurance companies, that when you earn a profit, that could go towards giving people care. Other companies where they keep profits
President
for themselves,
Obama,
you could be
President
using
Obama
that.
Obama looked at that when he was looking at Obamacare. Look at these profits that these companies are making, what goes through it. What I will say is that there are an increasing number of CEOs, of leaders in business, who are worried that at this point they're losing the battle, that they're looking like the bad guys, and that people don't understand how business works, how capitalism
Absolutely.
Works. I spoke with some last night who are very concerned about this,
yeah.
too, which is why they're making that term with the BRT, trying to...
Business roundtable, exactly.
They look at it as an outreach program to try and educate.
They're worried about the barbarians at the gate, but they have to, you know, grow a spine. Okay, because might makes right.
Or teach
might
them
makes right. What kindness? Kindness comes from lifting all boats and from growing the pie,
right,
so that you can use tax
show
dollars.
People that that's what they're doing. I think they're trying to gently show people that that's what they're doing. They may not have messaged
really?
It perfectly.
And you're right, Elizabeth. We won't do it anymore.
No, but that, look, my point with what they've said on that, with taking care of all of your constituencies, that's something great companies have been doing for years and decades.
Right, without I having mean, to talk about it in virtue signal.
Yeah, but maybe it's a time to start talking about some of these things so
we'll
that people
if it works.
Are educated.
Amazon's reportedly testing a feature that would allow its Echo Buds to track workouts. The headphones that were launched back in October during a test run of the Echo Buds, CNBC found a fitness section hidden in the software.
What? We dug through and found
it. I couldn't believe it. I was looking through the code that was written for these buds just to familiarize myself with the...
Was it in Python?
It was a high-performance Pascal.
HTML.
It was a Fortran. I have no idea. No, it was not me. It included options to track a workout, including steps and distance, and to create a fitness profile. If Amazon launches a feature, the one that seems to be hidden, are we sure? It's so weird. It would be the maybe they put it in like a beta version of this because they might eventually...
Well, you leave a placeholder for it.
You leave a placeholder for it. Okay.
That wouldn't surprise me. There are things like with Tesla where they leave placeholders where they can eventually upgrade the software or give you more power or different things over the
fly.
Airwaves.
Right, levitate.
Yeah, levitate. All right. It would be the first company's, Amazon's first foray into the fitness monitoring space. A lot of people think that's the future for companies like Apple.
The problem is there are so many companies that think it's the future that the question is how commoditized does it become?
Well, and that would be good for the rest of us.
Right. It would be great if we could all be tracking these things and if you could take that record with you and if doctors could read it and hospitals could read it along
exactly.
the way.
Absolutely.
That's great news for consumers. But the question is how profitable will it be when all the big players are jumping into
there
it?
There you go with the profits again. You and your obsession with profits. God almighty.
Okay, let's go. All right, they're yelling at me.
Who is? They're yelling at you?
I'm not gonna out them.
Evans?
So you can yell at them. Oh my goodness.
Yell at him, Evans. It says it wasn't him.
Let's go. It was you a minute and a half ago.
Was it?
Yeah. All right. Move it or lose it.
Next on Squawk Pod, pollster Frank Luntz has a theory and some statistics about the socialism versus capitalism conversation that's captured the nation, or at least captured the attention of Squawk Box.
The public thinks the rich don't pay their fair share and they think the poor are taking benefits they don't deserve.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Squawk Pod. The debate over what an Elizabeth Warren presidency would mean for the markets continues. This week, Wall Street titans have weighed in. At the Greenwich Economic Forum on Tuesday, billionaire hedge fund manager Paul Tudor Jones had this to say.
Our poll said if the If Elizabeth Warren was elected, the S&P would trade around 2250. I think it's at 3050 now. But I'm just saying her policies probably would, assuming that they were implemented, probably would give you something like that.
A little later on at the same event, a different billionaire hedge fund manager, Mark Lazary, shared a bold piece of advice.
I think the best trade out there today is that you should go short the market the minute it's clear that Warren's the nominee.
And Jamie Dimon, CEO of JPMorgan Chase and a man who's publicly toyed with running for president himself, took on Senator Warren directly.
She uses some pretty harsh words. Some would say vilifies successful people. So I don't like vilifying anybody. I think we should applaud successful people. You know, a lot of people come to the company for opportunity and choice and success. We want that for everybody. Now, that's a little bit different than paying your fair share and how the taxation system should work. That I completely understand. But I think we have to look at America was founded on free enterprise. Freedom and free enterprise are interchangeable. You can't separate them from each other.
Senator Elizabeth Warren caught wind of Dimon's comments and tweeted her response on Tuesday, yesterday, writing that it's only fair that Jamie Dimon and, quote, his billionaire friends chip in to make sure everyone else has a chance to succeed. Here's Joe digesting this online exchange with our next guest, pollster and political strategist Frank Luntz.
That was a very measured response from her. She's learning a little bit, I think, maybe, and not to completely vilify everything. But I'll just bring up one from years ago. Bono, the great singer in U2, said in certain parts of the world, you look up on the hill and see the rich guy in his house and you say, I'm going to get that guy. When you come to the United States, you look up at that guy in the house on the hill and you say, I want to be that guy. Is that changing?
It is changing. And we are in a culture of punishing success because we feel that they made it through ill-gotten gains. Let me give you a couple of statistics. Right now, capitalism is only 15 points above socialism in terms of what the American people would prefer for their economic system.
At what basis? 15 points, what versus what?
57% choose capitalism, 43% choose socialism if they were forced to choose. And among the next generation, the millennials, it's actually 2-to-1 socialism over capitalism. So we are not teaching our kids well. Second, if you change capitalism to economic freedom, it's the word, it's not the term. The problem is, if you change it, it's 2-to-1 economic freedom over socialism. The problem is the CEOs, corporate America, is not using the right language. They talk about
a tainted word.
They talk about profits when the public is prepared to pay for performance. These are simple changes of language. Second, is the American people feel that there should be a safety net now, and this is a change over the last 20 years, that they believe that those who are poor or working class deserve to be raised up. The difference where Elizabeth Warren is wrong is that they don't want to take the top down. And that's a very great frustration. And
we have a social safety net. They want a better one.
They don't think it works. But that's part of the frustration with Washington. You're sending all your money to D.C. The public thinks the rich don't pay their fair share, and they think the poor are taking benefits they don't deserve. And that is always the key question for me. Which is the higher priority? Making sure the rich pay their fair share, making sure the only people who collect benefits are those.
What happens? Everybody becomes a millennial and the numbers for socialism go up, or millennials finally learn something about the way the world actually works and they turn into what, for lack of a better word, what the people that are older than.
I don't believe the millennials are going to learn from this.
They're never going to be.
School systems have failed
us. We did in the 70s.
It's one of the responsibilities of corporate America to go into public education, to teach economics to 11th and 12th graders, to teach civics to 11th and 12th graders. And it's not happening right now. And we have no one but ourselves to blame. Those students who learn history, who learn government, who learn economics are much more likely to believe in this.
I don't know that we're teaching economics less than we used to.
I
think it may be. These are kids who grew up during the Great Recession. They watched what happened to their parents. They watched the promises that were made get yanked out from under them, and now they don't believe it.
That's part of it, is that don't make promises you can't keep. Don't offer people pie in the sky, and that's exactly what a Medicare for All is about to do. It's about to say to everyone, you can get everything you want in health care. You can get your prescription drugs. You can meet with your doctor, get everything you want, and pay nothing.
So, Frank,
if
you had to bet, you'd say Elizabeth Warren becomes the Democratic nominee and she wins?
I would bet that she becomes the Democratic nominee, and we are going to see a fight for the core of the American
soul. But you think she can win?
I absolutely believe she can win. And it's up to your viewers, starting right now, 1 year out, we're exactly a year from the election, to adopt a different tone, different language, a different presentation to defend economic freedom. And if they don't, then you are going to see this collapse. Because the American people right now, a majority of them support Medicare for all. A majority support a wealth tax. A majority support a 70% highest rate of income tax. The economic freedom advocates are losing as of November 5th or 6th, whatever today is, and they have 1 year to fix that.
Right. Frank Luntz, something to think about, that's for sure. We do our best, but then I pay the price on Twitter. Anyway, thanks.
Next on Squawk Pod, A-Rod hitting personal finance advice out of the park.
There's two polarizing subjects that people get really shy about.
We talk
politics
and money
and financial literacy. Yeah. And you see people shrink.
Details of his new show on CNBC, his journey in business, and the Mets' new manager. That's next.
Is that okay?
We're on the air.
Yeah. All right. I know we're on the air. I'm just getting things squared away.
This is Squawk Pod.
Three, two, one. Up and Becky. Cue.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is at the Deal Book Conference here in New York. In the meantime, we have an all-star guest host with us this morning, Alex Rodriguez, founder and CEO of investment firm A-Rod Corporation. Alex, it's great to have you here today.
It's hard. I mean, he's a cleanup hitter, and here I am.
You can step in. You can step in for him. In what world is that? Is he? No. You're okay. You can say that. That's nice. And we're coworkers now. We're colleagues.
We are.
Basically at CNBC. We're going to talk all about that. It's a great idea.
Back in the game.
Yes. Back in the game is a great idea.
It's a great idea.
To help people and to watch you do it, too, I think.
It's
cool.
Such an unfortunate thing, but it's an opportunity to educate, entertain, and hopefully inspire. But what I found is that great people, great athletes, fall into tough times, and they have the potential to be great, but they need the people, they need the process, they need governance, and I think you'll be entertained and really educated with how people can lose up to $260 million.
And back in the game, Alex helps ex-athletes and others, former entertainers, regain their financial footing. Here he is with former heavyweight champ Evander Holyfield.
Tell me a little bit more about your house.
Well, my house was 54,000 square feet. I paid for it in cash.
You paid for it in cash?
Yeah, I paid
for it. How much was that?
It cost me $20
million. Champ, what are some of the things you're doing today for income?
Personal appearance.
Any idea, ballpark, how much you're bringing in?
$20,000.
What else? I know you're trying to sometimes promote fights.
I'm a promoter, boxing promoter. And
what's that company called?
Real Deal Promotion. They caught the person who was doing all the bad thing. They put him out.
Was someone taking money?
Well, you understand, that's what usually happens.
Mm.
Now they relaunching and we got new people. So we're trying to get it back right. When you don't have other body looking out for you, everybody taking something for themselves. Man, everybody was just stealing, man. They just stealing, stealing.
Seems like you trusted the wrong people.
I couldn't be struck immediately, Alex, was it's not always going to be about the revenue side of the equation. It's going to be about the cost side. And that must be hard to tell people that you just can't live like this.
That's right.
I mean, what are his options for the revenue side at this point?
You know, a lot of times it's not the revenue. We knew we got the revenue right. I mean, he made over $250 million. It's the people, it's the process.
What can he do now to generate revenue?
I mean, one thing about Evander, we walked all around the city, and the people of New York spoke. I mean, he is beloved.
He's so well known.
Right.
He's so famous. He's trusted. He's got a great brand. But instead of doing fire extinguisher or barbecue sauce, is really get his brand that is still pretty solid and genuine. In today's world, you win by being truthful and genuine.
Yes.
And he's both. So we got him into some protein. We got him back into GNC. And get him where his superpower and his brand can actually bring value.
How about the expense side of the equation? What is he? How do you restructure all of his, you know, the way he's living right now? His whole situation, I would think you need to look at.
Yeah, you know, his people, his process, and his economic alignment. And there was none there. I brought in my buddy Marcus Lemonis, my high school buddy. And we asked him, so tell us, champ, who manages your money? He did not know the name. He had to look in his phone and he said, oh, it's George. But he can remember who he fought when he was 12 years old, who was his trainer, who was his nutrition. I mean, first, last name. I said, we got to get you to know George better. And who is George, by the way?
Alex, one of the things that has always impressed me about you is you became a millionaire when you were a teenager. How did you figure this out so quickly and so early? You may not have made every step right along the way, but I remember talking to you over 11 years ago when you were already a massive real estate investor. And I think you told me at the time you'd rather be on the cover of Fortune than on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You've known this for decades, what you kind of had a goal and a plan in mind.
Becky, I learned by making a lot of mistakes. And I learned because I was a number one pick out of Westminster Christian in Miami as a 17-year-old. So I've had a lot of time to practice. Average career is 5.5 years. I played for almost 25 years. You know, you make 90% of your income as an athlete from age 20 to 30. And less than 5% of our 750 players have a college degree. So I'm not Joe over here, but I would short the stock. So one of the greatest competitive advantage that we have as athletes is we make a lot of money early. Well, who is the Warren Buffett, the Barry Sternlicht, the Mark Lazary in your town? And go dollar per dollar and go take a 10 or 20 year ride. But you can't miss on these people. You need a championship. You need Mariano Rivera. You need Andy Pettit. Well, the same thing in finances. You need the Barry Sternlicht and you need the Warren Buffetts in your community or in any community to help you out.
One thing that strikes me is a lot of the lessons from this can be applied to normal people, too.
Absolutely.
Just the idea of getting your house in order. Personal finance is not something we teach in high school. It's not something we teach in college. And I wouldn't say it's something that the American public in general is very well trained in.
There's two polarizing subjects when you go to a cocktail, when you talk with friends, that people get really shy about. When you
politics.
Talk about politics.
And money.
And financial literacy.
Yeah.
Right? And you see people shrink. In both sometimes. Financial literacy, it takes practice. It takes discipline. The one thing about athletes and entertainers, they have the potential to be great business people, but you have to work at it. I work so much harder at my business than I did at baseball because I don't have a competitive advantage. I'm going up against really, really smart people with great teams, and my competitive advantage is my team has to be at an institutional level and has to do what they, you know, walk the walk every day.
Talk about, you had Evander. How many shows have you done?
I've done one with Joe Smith and then four in the season.
So it's going to be four in the season. Who else?
We have Brian, who you mentioned.
Off camera, Brian yeah. Dunkelman. We know about Ryan Seacrest, who's everywhere,
yeah.
Basically.
He's on his way to be a billionaire.
On his way to be a billionaire. I have no doubts. And he's on with Kelly Ripa, and among a million other things that he's doing. And Brian Dunkelman, you don't think of him as like an athlete that got, you know, sort of taken advantage of or blew all his money or something. It's a fall from a pretty high level to where he'd like some type of redemption, I guess.
Joe, a lot of times, you know, Warren Buffett always says, you can throw 30% of your IQ out the door and you have plenty to succeed. And it's not that Ryan is so much smarter than Brian. It's just, you know, making decisions in real time. And Ryan obviously made the right decisions.
I guess so. All right. We're going to find out who else and how. I mean, I don't think you'd ever run out of people, would you? I mean, this could be a long running.
The phone is now ringing off the hook because they know we're trying to do the right things.
Yep.
And they're projecting in a good way. And we're getting them back.
I was going to say,
back in the game.
With Evander, finding these revenue potential places mm-hmm. for him, straightening up his brand. I mean, that's great. That's
yeah.
a yep. wonderful service to be able to do.
And he's excited. He's re-energized and he's having fun.
We've talked a lot about late cycle worries and concerns in terms of the economy and the stock market. Real estate sometimes marches to a different beat, and it might be more interest rate dependent. Is business good for you right now? Were you harvesting or buying right now?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, we try to sell three and buy one, but really be disciplined. And we made a decision at our company about 3 years ago to get really disciplined. But look, we're buying in secondary and tertiary markets, apartments, but we're also buying in New York City. And I'm still bullish long-term in New York City. If you have a great piece of the city and you can double your money every 7 years.
Is that, you're not playing in luxury necessarily.
Not luxury.
Yeah, because no. That's the market that has seen the most pressure in the New York mm-hmm. real estate market. But other areas are yeah. looking good.
I just think housing looks healthy. And again, if you're buying it right, if you're not over-leveraging, if you have non-recourse debt, you know, you just pick up your coupon and not try to reinvent the wheel and just be patient.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about baseball? Let's
sure.
try a little bit.
So
we got the Mets and the Yankees. They're the local teams. And I mean, Is it worth it to play for a New York team? Or I watched the way the New Yorkers reacted to the Yankees, which had a great season. But I mean, they get very angry very quickly when they don't win every year. Is it worth it? The ups and downs are, which
of course,
are,
the, it first is. Of all, there's no greater city in the world, and to play for the Yankees, and I'm sure it's this way for the Mets, is the greatest franchise in the world. Now, the Yankees, for the first time since the 1920s, have not made a World Series in a full decade.
Oh,
now,
I'm sorry. I'm from Cincinnati. Okay. Do you heard of the Bengals?
Yeah. In New York, you know, a decade is like a century. So, you know, obviously it's a different game and a different expectation.
And Beltre, what do you think of the Mets going to... People, I could sort of become a Mets fan. It would be tough for me with the Yankees being from Cincinnati. But maybe the Mets.
Well, Carlos, first of all, is one of my best friends. Carlos was my teammate. Carlos, I've been mentoring him since he was, you know, 19 years old and he walked into the league. He got my agent, my business manager. Like, he literally followed all the way. And he's just been a great student. And now he's a great teacher of mine, right? I mean, how the world turns. But... You're talking about a very, very wealthy man, a good investor, philanthropist. He lives here with his wife, with Jessica. He's the perfect guy for the Wilpon family. He knows New York, and he's a world champion.
And we try to get one more thing in, because I think it's going to change the way sports is viewed. And we know that you can't DVR sports, so it's always going to be great for advertisers. If people start getting engaged with just small bits of gambling, like FanDuel or DraftKings, have you done anything there? I have DraftKings now. I bet on 9 college games, and I can't. I need more screens to watch.
You're from Cincinnati, UMP Rose. You guys are...
Oh, man. We have a street named Pete Rose Way in Cincinnati. Did anyone hustle more than him?
He's one of the greatest players of all time.
It's unbelievable.
I love Pete. I mean, he became a very good friend.
He's wacky now. I like watching him on TV because anything can happen.
But Joe, you know what? He's a baseball savant.
Like me.
Baseball savant.
Yeah.
And he has the memory of a hedge fund trader. He does not forget a bat, a pitch, a sequence. I love the guy.
But what about everything being marked up? Teams being marked up, all valuations being marked up based on legalized gambling. Am I wrong about that?
Look, if you can buy an NFL team, even if it's expensive, I like it because obviously the model is really, really good without the guaranteed contracts. It's expensive. Look, people are paying big money for these teams. They don't generate a lot of cash flow.
Yeah.
You have to have staying power for decades. You know, Jerry Reinsdorf said, when you buy a team, you try to lose or make $5 million, take some pain. But over 15 or 20 years, you should do well. And Jerry's done very well, and so have many
others. I think fan engagement just goes up a lot. And I don't know how many states are going to finally do this. And I don't know whether there's a downside to it.
But, Joe, you see what fantasy football has changed the NFL.
Right.
There's so much interest.
Yeah.
Baseball is the ultimate gambling sport. You can gamble on every pitch. There's 300, 400 pitches per game.
Yeah.
And it's
a lot
just,
of games,
you know,
too.
It's like low interest rates. I mean, at what point do you want to sell your soul out there, right?
We might be able to have, you know, a lot more back in the game episodes about people that lose all their money gambling that you can try and help. That's the one downside to this, and you got to be careful. I mean, it's small amounts, but the engagement every play I'm in on now. In college.
And so if there's a blowout, you're still paying attention because if you have a
That just makes me mad that I'm so stupid to bet on the crappy.
You gamble more on football or baseball?
I haven't done baseball yet because it was recent. DraftKings, I just
signed up.
Joined about three months ago, and I put in $500. I'm at 400, and I'm kicking ass.
Okay,
because I'm only I've been up.
Yeah. I only lost 20%.
That's the show for today. On our rundown tomorrow, Tom Friedman, the New York Times columnist. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern.
Confusing, daunting, and changing all at once.
To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.